for donating. Haven't donated yet? Go to our secure donation page at cjsf.ca/donate or send a check to CJSF Radio, Sub 1420, SFU, Burnaby, BC, V5A 1S6. Be awesome with us. Donate to Fund Drive today.
Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM, diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.
Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour Canada report recorded on Friday, October 20th, 2023. I'm Mark Belanger.
I'd like to think it would be an automatic right for a young person growing up to go into a place of work. He or she would have automatic access to a union.
That is 87-year-old Ed Broadbent, a former leader of the Federal New Democratic Party and currently one of the directors of the Broadbent Institute. The Institute is a progressive organization supporting change aimed at democracy, equality, sustainability, and the training of young new leaders. Mr. Broadbent has co-authored a book entitled Seeking Social Democracy, 7 Decades in the Fight for Equality. The other authors are Francis Abel, Jonathan Sass, and Luke Savage. I reached Mr. Broadbent at his home in Ottawa. Mr. Broadbent, can you give us a short working definition of social democracy?
Well, I would say that any country that has a high combination of political, civil, and economic, social, and cultural rights as defined by the UN instruments on those subjects, would be a social democracy. If I can elaborate a bit on that, I've always seen social democracy as building on a liberal democracy. A liberal democracy can have or should have freedom of elections, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, a number of other human rights should flourish. But what social democracy brings to the table, let me say, it's an add-on to political and civil rights. It's the add-on of social, economic, and cultural rights, the right to a pension, the right to health care, the right to education. These social rights are, in some senses, even more important to ordinary working people than civil and political. They're what enable working class family, for example, to live a civilized life by having a pension provided, by having certain guarantees like the right to a union if you want it. These guarantees of social and economic existence standards bring life to the political and civil rights in such a society.
You mentioned trade unions. What is the role of trade unions in social democracy?
Well, trade unions are absolutely key. They've been the key in the history of social democracy, in the organization of places of work in Europe and in Canada. In Canada, especially from the great creative period of unions from the mid-30s and into the 40s, let's say, they brought democracy to the workplace. It's an old saying, but it's true, that political and civil rights are important for trade union families in the society at large. But in places of work, where they spend most of their lives, it's absolutely essential that they have a right to a trade union that can bargain collectively with the employers or the owners of capital.
You write in the book, Seeking Social Democracy, Seven Decades in the Fight for Equality, that the automatic right to join a trade union still makes sense. Why do you think this, and what would make it possible?
Well, I've always thought, without giving it too much depth, I guess, of consideration, that the right to a union should be just like our other rights. We don't have to, for example, fight every year for our pensions. Our Canada pension is provided, and when you get to be a certain age, you get the pension. You don't have to organize, compete, and get collective pressure to get it. You get it as a right of citizenship, just as you have health care as a right of citizenship. So my view is that given the importance of a union in the life experience of a worker in that place of work, there would have to be a vote certifying that union at some point, have be a representative, for example, of steel workers or auto workers or some other union. So there'd be a process of selecting which union should apply. But once the union is there, there shouldn't be a struggle, A, to get it. Should be an automatic right to tick off the union of your choice. And certainly you shouldn't have to fight for it. It's reestablishment after a contract period. Should be a right to be enjoyed, as I say, like the right to vote in society or the right to have access to health care. Similarly, there should be a right to have access to a trade union.
Unions in Canada are helped by the RAND formula, which ensures that workers who are not members of the union still pay dues because the union has expenses related to advocacy, collective bargaining, and other costs. Is the RAND formula in Canada in jeopardy? Would, for instance, the Conservatives under Pierre Poilievre remove it?
Well, I think there's always a risk of doing away with the RAND formula with a right-wing government. But to be quite candid, I haven't seen any evidence of this in the immediate future coming from either the Conservatives or the Liberals. But it's absolutely important, of course, for the unions to keep an eye out for this and to resist very strongly indeed any weakening of the RAND formula or to resist any attack on it.
The cover of the book, Seeking Social Democracy, Seven Decades in the Fight for Equality, has a supportive quote from the great Canadian philosopher Charles Taylor. You and Dr. Taylor worked together for many years in the NDP. What would Dr. Taylor say were the chances for the future development of social democracy?
Well, I'm tempted to laugh because I can't read Charles Taylor's mind. He is like most of us who remained as strong social democrats, optimistic or hopeful, if not in the short run, always in the long run, that society will come around to seeing that the best form of government, the best one for people to maximize liberty and equality, is social democracy. And Dr. Taylor, as you indicate, has been a strong supporter of such a society all his life. And all I can say is I don't know what he's thinking about the prospects in the short run, but you can be sure that he has retained faith in the idea of social democracy as being the best form of government.
There seems to be a rise in fascism in the United States. Does this concern you?
I am, like many people around the world, concerned about the potential rise of fascism in the United States. There are many, many signs of it going on. principally, but not exclusively, associated with the personality of Trump. It does concern me the vast disparities between in wealth between rich and poor Americans, and the disparities in terms of the racial divide, particularly between African Americans and others. It's a terrible cauldron, and the failure of the Democratic Party from the 1990s on, in particular, to address the concerns of ordinary people was very instrumental in producing the circumstances leading to a right-wing movement. They're abandoning virtually the working class in their electoral efforts to appeal to the professional people in the East Coast associated with Harvard and the universities of that high quality, and on the West Coast with other university and research institutions. The Democrats went after these people, bring them into their political fold. That's entirely fine. But what they did in the process, too, they abandoned all interest in the traditional base of their party and the trade union movement along with it. So it was no great surprise to many of us that these people, abandoned as they were in the 80s and 90s, and by the trade deals that gave specific rights to corporations, especially trading and investment rights, saw the withering away of a good part of the manufacturing base in the U.S., and the workers, having felt abandoned, turned to the right, many of them did, and to Donald Trump in particular. There's a very real concern that this development can continue and move into an extreme right direction. We saw signs of this in the move to not recognize the recent election of Mr. Biden, and many of the politicians responsible for that have continued to agitate and create a very unhealthy foundation for democracy. So it is a matter of great concern to all of us in the world, not just to Americans, about what happens in the U.S.
Picking up on that and the vocabulary used in these conversations, you in the book equate democratic socialism and social democracy interchangeably. Do you think in the United States, using the term democratic socialism is a good tactic, especially when it seems that there are billions of dollars ready to hit anybody who says the word socialism? Should they be using social democracy?
Well, it's up to Americans to decide. I think all politicians have the obligation to pick the vocabulary of their country. And it's a pretty risky thing for those of us who live outside of that country to suggest what kind of language format or structure should be used. But having said that, as you point out, I use both social democracy and democratic socialism interchangeably. And I have seen polls recently in the U.S. where, particularly amongst young Americans, there's a very high preference given to socialism as a word. That did surprise me. But does indicate perhaps an opening ideologically, philosophically in the U.S. that simply wasn't there a few years ago. So it could be the case that the vocabulary once thought not acceptable in the U.S. debate has now come home. And it could be that the political terminology used by young and old alike, it would be no different from that found in Canada.
The book, Seeking Social Democracy: 7 Decades in the Fight for Equality, has been published by ECW Press. You can find its website at ecwpress.com. And that's it, labor news you can use. I'm Mark Belanger. Thank you for listening. And remember, it is all about global solidarity.
Standing up against racism is an ongoing battle. How will you help?
Everyone should be treated equally, and the legal system should work for the people, not against them. Every day, our network of supporters, lawyers, and educators from across the country continue to fight against injustice and oppression, both in and outside of the courtroom and at all levels of government.
This message is brought to you by the Canadian Anti-Racism Youth Coalition. Visit caryc.ca for more information about how you can stand up and speak out.
Why donate to CJSF 90.1 FM's annual fund drive? To help fund independent journalism in a rapidly shifting media landscape. To support local and independent artists in getting invaluable FM airplay they won't get anywhere else. To provide a platform for underrepresented and marginalized voices. To feel awesome about contributing to our community. Be awesome with us. Donate to CJSF 90.1 FM's fund drive now at cjsf.ca/donate.
Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour report recorded on Friday, October 27th, 2023. I'm Mark Belanger. The organization which represents trade unions globally has called for an immediate ceasefire in the Israeli-Hamas conflict. The International Trade Union Confederation represents national union centers such as the Canadian Labour Congress. In a statement released to the media, the ITUC calls for a ceasefire and the return of all hostages and people held without legitimate legal reasons in Gaza and Israel. The Confederation is also calling for a major humanitarian effort for the people of Gaza and others displaced since the conflict began on October 7th. It has repeated its call for all governments to strive for peace and towards the realization of a two-state solution with an end to the occupation and two sovereign democratic countries living in conditions of lasting peace. It reiterates its support for UN Security Council resolutions 242 and 338. 242 calls for Israel's withdrawal from the territories it captured in 1967 in exchange for lasting peace. 338 was adopted during the Yom Kippur War of 1973 as the first of three resolutions which led to an end to the war. Israel withdrew from Gaza in 2005. Hamas began governing in Gaza in 2007. The ITUC's fight for peace in the world is long-standing. Its position on peace was recently reinforced by the ITUC's newly elected General Secretary, Luc Triand, in his acceptance speech at a special online congress October 12th. He emphasizes that there can be no peace in the world if the rights of working people are denied.
Our world is going through serious geopolitical storms. There are armed conflicts in every region, and military coups are again the order of the day in many places. The global race for more armaments has never really gone away, but it is now accelerating again. World military expenditure grew by 19% over the last decade to reach a record high of over $2 trillion. We all see that the daily reality is moving into the wrong direction. Refugee flows, usually from those who are weakest in society, are increasing. Since the start of this year, over 100 million people had fled war, violence, and persecution. And the impacts of climate change are driving more and more people to flee. As a trade union movement, we are at the heart of the peace movement. And we must continue to strive for dialogue to resolve existing conflicts and prevent new ones. This helps our members. This helps the weakest in our societies. Striving for peace is striving also for democracy. The failure of governments over many years to ensure the social contract is driving more and more people to the political extremes, fueling the extreme right, exposing the vulnerable and eroding solidarity. The global architecture for peace and democracy must be underpinned by the new social contract at the global but also at national level. And what we see is also that the line between autocracies and democracy are blurring. When dialogue between states and the people breaks down, when nations flirt with autocracy to pass unpopular laws, when parliaments are put aside, when governments deploy state forces to quell lawful resistance, democracy is on the line and working people suffer the consequences. Across the world, we continue to see social regression rather than social progress. Authoritarian government responses to the different crises are on the rise, and the interests of companies, ultra-rich oligarchs, and the finance sector continue to predominate over the well-being of the majority of the population. And besides the direct and indirect consequences of war in a difficult geopolitical context, where workers are also suffering from the climate crisis, the food and energy crisis, and high inflation, which continues to undermine their purchasing power, pushing many of them further into poverty. The state of social justice in the world should shame us all. The top 1% has taken 38% of all wealth accumulated since the 90s, whereas the bottom 50% has gained over 2%, and 685 million people still live in extreme poverty. Over 50 million workers are in modern slavery, and at least 160 million children remain in child labor, with numbers going up again after decades of decline. Every year, 3 million workers die at the workplace, and hundreds of millions are injured or made ill because of work. More than 60% are working in the informal economy without any labor protection, and 4 billion are excluded from social protection. These sobering numbers can surely leave none of us untouched. This is an unacceptable reality. And when it comes to workers' rights, attacks are on the rise everywhere in the world. There are no regions anymore where we can take workers' rights for granted. In June this year, we launched the 10th edition of our I2C Global Rights Index. This index shows us clearly that the problem of attacks on workers' rights is big and getting bigger. It provides shocking evidence that the foundations of democracy are under attack, with a clear link between workers' rights being upheld and the strength of any democracy. The erosion of one amounts to the degradation of the other. Across the world, in both high-income and low-income countries, even though working people have faced an historic cost-of-living crisis and spiraling inflation driven by corporate greed, governments have cracked down on the right to collectively negotiate wage rises and take strike action. Indeed, when even the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank share our analysis that corporate greed is driving inflation, we must not accept that failed policies of austerity, neither we have to accept a free ride for corporations. And this goes hand in hand with ever-increasing tax invasion by the same companies. Tax the rich must be more than a slogan. It's now time for legally binding action. Workers are paying the price. 9 out of 10 countries violated the right to strike. We are in a global fight to maintain this right. Our recent procedure at the ILO to secure that the right to strike is a core part of guaranteeing freedom of association is essential. It's about our fundamental tool that has brought us so far in getting better working and pay conditions for workers. 8 out of 10 countries violated the right to collective bargaining. 3 out of 4 countries excluded working people from the right to establish or join a trade union. The rights to free speech and assembly was restricted in nearly 1 out of 2 countries, often resulting in protesting workers facing police brutality. Workers experienced violence in 44 countries, and in at least 8 countries we have evidence of killed trade unionists. Brothers and sisters, part of our movement. Last week, we received reports of new killings on trade unionists in the Philippines and in Guatemala. These attacks on rights and the lives of trade unionists, and indeed the converging crisis that we are facing, need an all-encompassing response that will build more sustainable and resilient societies. A transformative agenda with social justice at the center. The IJC Congress last year launched our global trade union demand for a new social contract. It is our program to create a peaceful world with decent and climate-friendly jobs for all, with just transition at the center, with robust systems for public health and care. Our new social contract calls for the creation of decent and climate-friendly jobs for all through investments in strategic economic sectors such as care and sustainable infrastructure, which just transitions, and the formalization of informal work. It calls for right for all workers, regardless of their employment status. It also calls for living minimum wages, pay rises to face the cost of living crisis, and real and rapid progress on equal pay for women and men. At the current speed, women will only be paid equal wages 257 years from now. It also calls for universal social protection, for equality, ending all discrimination on the basis of gender, race, or any grounds. And our new social contract also calls for inclusion with a truly inclusive multilateral system and fundamental reform of international trade and finance. Equality must also apply just as much within the trade union movement, in our structures and in our programs. The IJC has made progress on many of these areas in recent years. But today, the odds are stacked against working people, and we need to do more. The core of our work is international trade union solidarity. International trade union solidarity. In a world where capital and companies are global, where our income and rights are systematically attacked in a coordinated manner by governments and employers, the way forward for trade unions is to strengthen our international cooperation and action. Workers of the world unite. That was nearly 200 years ago the slogan of the first trade unions. It is not different today. Workers of the world unite.
Support for FunDrive helps our radio station in innumerable ways. This year, we launched an awesome new CGSF radio app to make our live broadcast and your favorite programs even easier to listen to. Anytime, anywhere. Your support helps make projects like this happen and succeed. Donations allow us to grow and expand projects like the CGSF app, and your contributions will make those a reality. Be awesome with us. Donate now at cjsf.ca/donate.
Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM, diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.